This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball game is on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Sauce after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
We'll talk more about the college football national championship game from last night here in just a bit, but I wanted to switch gears a little bit and talk about something that Eric Musselman brought up yesterday in his press conference with the media and previewing Vanderbilt that's coming up on Wednesday night. And I think he's one of those coaches, Tommy. I don't know if you feel the same way, but he's one of those coaches that could just listen to him talk about pretty much anything because of how his mind works and how he looks at things in a certain perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's some coaches that just have that. Well, you were mentioning Nick Saban, for instance, when last night he was on the national championship game broadcast, and there were a few things that he broke down, a few things that he was looking at, and stuff that I would never know or ever look at, but there's a reason why he's the best coach ever to coach college football. But just hearing him talk about it, it just fascinates me. I enjoy hearing the perception and where their mind is at, what they are looking at.
Right.
And Eric Musselman.
What they value.
Yeah, exactly. And Eric Musselman had a very similar moment yesterday. And if you want to check out the entire press conference, head over to hitthatline.com. But he was talking about rotations. And this is a lengthy clip, but I think it's very important to get the context of everything. But he's talking about rotations and how he is able to make it work with not having to play 12 or 13 guys like a lot of college basketball teams do because of depth purposes, because of, you know, you want to make sure that everyone's getting their minutes and everyone's happy. But he has a particular philosophy on it that I think is very fascinating. Take a listen.
You know, when I was an assistant in college at LSU and Arizona State, I felt like we had 13 players that were eligible to play every night. And I kept saying to myself, why? Because after every game, even when we won, there's like four guys unhappy because they weren't playing or their parents were unhappy or their AAU. And so it was great to sit back as an assistant and observe. And I'm used to a 48-minute game, 82 games, travel, getting into the hotel at 2:30 in the morning, waking up, playing a game, playing another game, playing another game, playing four games in 6 nights. You need depth in the NBA. You play 82 games. In college, you play 30 games. We don't have any 35-year-old players that have played 12 or 13 years in the NBA that are icing their knees night after night after night. And so I thought depth was way overrated in college. And I didn't like walking into a locker room and having guys not be happy with their minutes. So I came up with the formula. I wanted four guys sitting out, or I wanted four scholarships where guys were either redshirting, sitting out due to transfers, or open scholarships. And that way, I felt like you could control your team chemistry in the locker room. That's above the conditioning standpoint. Then you get to your conditioning standpoint, and now you got to get with your staff and say, hey, we got four dudes sitting out. Now we've got to be the best conditioned team. And I think our limited roster size over the 5 years that I've been in college has worked to our benefit so much. I watch these teams play night after night after night, and they play us, and they start playing more people. And I saw it non-conference, and I'm starting to see it. And they start playing more people because they think they're going to wear us down. You're not going to wear us down.
I hear that.
Yeah.
And I hear him say about his formula. And honestly, and again, this I'm not a basketball coach at all. But when he comes out and says that, you know, I thought that having depth is overrated in college basketball, it kind of blows my mind because I was always thought that, you know, to have a rotation of 8, 9, 10 guys is vital and the key to success in college basketball.
Well, there's about three things to break down there.
It's a lot to break down, yeah.
Depth, locker room morale, if you will. And I thought the interesting thing about just the number of games that ties kind of into depth. So let's start with just the fact that, as he broke it down, there's 32 college games. There's not 80-plus like there is in the NBA. These guys, and I've said this for a long time, we talk about rest and recovery and this and that. These guys are playing two games a week in conference play, and they're 19, 20, 21 years old. And they're flying private charter planes, or they got the best medical care and training staffs around and available. There's a limited number of practice hours. This idea of rest and recovery, and they keep doing this. By February, their legs are going to be shot. You know, I've always thought that was what was overrated. I've never thought about it, though, from the standpoint of like he went into with the second phase of his comments there and his explanation of, hey, we're just going to have 9 guys, basically. That's essentially what he said. I know I got 13 scholarships, but as long as I'm here, my plan is to have 13 players. I mean, to have 9 players out of the 13 available. Because, as he said, four of these are going to be the red shirt or transfer years or something else going on, which also leads into the idea of this is why the guy hits up the transfer portal, grad transfers, these kind of things more often. I'm a big believer in the 10,000-hour rule. The more you do something to become an expert at it, you got to have about 10,000 hours under your belt. And the more you give your best players reps and opportunities, the better and sharper they become at their skills, particularly when you're talking about muscle memory things like shooting a basketball. And all this does is allow your better players, your best 5, your best 7, to play more. To me, that makes sense, John.
Mm-hmm.
That's another byproduct of what he's doing here. If you want to become an expert at something, you got to spend a long time doing it. And to be an expert professional basketball player someday, you need to get a lot of reps, a lot of looks. This also provides, I think, for your players to become better players at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Because they've seen more, they've been in more. They've been in those scrapes. They've been in those moments where they had to overcome, where resilience was required. All of these things we've seen so far this year. And they come out the other side better for it because they weren't watching from the bench. They were in there. So to me, it allows your best 5 or 7 players to play more.
Mm.
And that's really, the best byproduct of what he's talking about.
Yeah, because in college basketball, when you see some of the great teams that go through, many a times, Tommy, it'd be nice, and I'm sure that people would take it all day long, that if they had an entire team from 1 to 13 that were 4 or 5-star players. I'm sure that that's what everyone would want, because talent can take you so far, especially in this day in college basketball. Coaching matters. I'm not saying it doesn't, but talent and high-level talent is what gets you to that next level. But as we know in this day and age, and it's not just a college basketball, it might be the worst product of it, but just in college sports in general, if kids aren't playing, they're not happy.
Well,
there's not the whole adage of, you know, I'm here for the team and I'm going to do what it takes. And I'm going to bide my time until, even if it takes till year 3 or 4 in my college career, I'm just going to work extra hard. And I'm not saying not everybody's like that, but I'm just telling you that there is a loss of that mentality now in college sports, especially. And this is a great way of what he was talking about to counteract that.
But what he's talking about is he's setting expectations. Imagine if you came in here every day and you did all the work to get ready for a radio show. But for a whole year, we didn't let you get on the air. You did all the work.
It'd be frustrating.
You cut all the audio. You read all the notes. You printed out the stories. You prepared for a show every day, but you never got the chance to get on the air. You just got to sit and watch everybody else get on the radio. That's essentially what these other 4 players have done. Is you go to practice, you lift weights, you go to film, you read the scouting report, you participate in everything to make the team better, but you never get off the bench in the games. But what if you were coming here preparing for shows and you were getting everything ready, but you knew up front, I can't go on the air for a year because my contract says so. I'm in a non-compete year. I'm at whatever, which is like a transfer year in the business world.
Yeah.
All right? But you're still coming in, working, doing all this stuff. But you know when you come to work every day, well, I'm not getting on the air today, but I'm a day closer to getting back on the air.
Mm.
Well, that's the same thing. You're not disappointed. You're not mad and pissed off because, well, the boss didn't put me on the air today. Thought today was the day. Well, if you know it's, hey, the plan up front's to redshirt me, or I can't play because I'm transferring. You got 4 of those guys that are that way. They're not unhappy because they're getting what they expect. They expect not to play.
Mm-hmm.
It's when you have 13 guys that are all expecting to play, it creates locker room problems. Well, he's eliminated 4 problems from his locker room right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. So he's got really probably one or two guys that are going to be wishing they got more minutes. Probably a guy like this year, like a Reggie Chaney. But you've taken that from six or seven guys down to two is what he's done. Because if a team plays seven, there's probably number eight and nine that wishes they were playing more.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's always going to be the case.
Yeah. And that type of formula to me is why I am so appreciative of how he put it into that perspective.
Yeah.
Because
we probably never would have figured it out otherwise.
No. And to translate it that way and saying that, listen, I know how this is now. I know how the game is now. And as much as we'd like to have it this one way, this is the way. Like every single team, Tommy, has at least one or two transfers every year. Every team. Arkansas has had that.
College basketball has got a real problem with
this. Yeah, and even guys that played a lot would end up transferring that people would be scratching their heads at. Like, people don't understand why is this the case? And instead of trying to fight that, Eric Musselman's coming in and saying, guys, you all got it up front knowing what you're doing.
Yeah.
This is what it is. So if you're mad about it, it's on you because you came here knowing what this was going to be.
The rule says you have to sit or we've already decided on a red shirt. I'm a big believer. People, they don't get mad in life unless they're not getting what they expect. Even when the result is not what you want, but it's what you expect, you're at least okay with that because you've had time to deal with it and process it. I really believe that. I talk about that a lot in life. People aren't mad that their bill is $30 higher when they open their cable bill if they expect it, if they've been given notice. It's when you get surprised. It's when, well, I expected $100 and my bill was $134.95. Now I'm mad. Why? Because I expected $100. You know, I go to a nice restaurant. I expect a really good ribeye steak with a sweet potato on the side and some good cheesecake. And I get there and the steak's tough. It's not cooked the way I want it. They didn't have the sweet potato. I had to settle for green beans. And the dessert was something bought at the store. Well, now I'm upset. That's not what I expected. I'd been there, but, you know, that's when we get mad in life. It's no different here. If these guys know, I ain't playing tonight. I'm out for a transfer here. I ain't playing tonight. Coach is redshirting me. Well, you know, I'm happy to go to practice and help the team now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he's talking about, guys that are, because it's hard to put in the work every day in practice. It's hard to put in the work every day in the weight room. It's hard to go sit through these film sessions with your teammates and watch a scouting report knowing I ain't going to play unless your expectations are calibrated properly. And that's what he's done. He's eliminated the people getting mad. And as he said in there, and their parents getting mad.
And yeah, he mentioned
their AAU coach too.
Yeah, because it's almost like he's almost ran into that issue
before.
It's
like he's dealt with that before. Yeah.
But my question is, Tommy, and I'll admit, I don't know because I don't sit here and hear every single college basketball coach talk about this, but is he one of the few that get that have this formula, understand it?
I think, well, as he said, he being an assistant at LSU and was at Arizona State, he watched his head coaches probably deal with those text messages from parents, from AAU coaches, having to sit down in the office with mom and dad. But more importantly, he was the assistant coach going into the locker room and probably the guy putting his arm around a player and explaining to them why they're not playing any minutes. When you got a player who's been the star at their high school, star on their AAU team, and now they can't get off the bench, and he's having to deal with a player. So I think he's just heading things off at the pass here.
Mm-hmm. And I think it'll resonate because I'm sure this gets explained many times when he's recruiting kids and whatnot. Because there's a lot of factors that go into a kid wanting to go to a school. Because let's be honest, as we've talked about, and this is in any sport, first and foremost, kids want to go pro. They want to play in the league. They want to go to a place that's going to put them in the best position to get them to the next level.
And it's only a matter of time. I mean, I'm a lottery pick.
Yeah, exactly.
They all think they're lottery picks.
They all think that. But you know what? It's as long as you have the perception that coming to your program will put them in that perspective and put them in that position, it's fine. But that's what the main thing wants. But also kids want to go to a place where they aren't wasting their time. And they're in their minds. I'm not all talking about in their minds. And if Eric Musselman goes into this, because we know this 2020 class is phenomenal that he's put together. And we know that a lot of kids, of course, with the Arkansas connections, that's always helpful. But if he's saying this in this press conference of how he approaches it, I am sure when he has gone to these kids, these high-level kids, these kids that probably could have gone to any other school that they wanted to, when he's going into their living room and putting out this plan of saying, all right, here's what I'm going to expect out of you. Here's what I'm going to give you. Here's that. These are the minutes you're going to play. This is the things we're going to work on. This is the role I think that I can define for you in our program. I think, again, my assumption, but I think that kids would appreciate and respect that more because, like you said,
honesty matters a lot.
When you're up front with somebody, and especially when it's like, if you come here, this is what to expect. You're not just going to tell them whatever they want to hear. If you're telling them the reality of what you expect out of them and what they can expect out of you, that'll resonate not only with kids, Tommy, but with the parents and with those AAU coaches because nobody feels like they're getting lied to, that there's any shadiness, that it's all up front and real. That resonates.
And we know that, you know, Eric Musselman doesn't do a lot of five-on-five work in practice, hardly ever. But it's hard to have a practice with 7 or 8 or 9 players. Just is. To do all the drills, to do everything, you know, you need bodies. Mm-hmm. And it's just hard to ask people to put in work but not get the reward unless they understand what's going on with it.
Yeah.
So that's just, that would be hard to do in any walk of life, right?
Would
hey,
be
John,
for me.
Hey, John, come in here for the next year on your red shirt radio year and be in here every morning and get the show ready, but never get behind the microphone.
Oh, it sounds like a great time. Sounds like fun.
Be like going to your job out there. Hey, come in, do all the work, but you're only going to
get... Don't get the glory.
You're not going to get paid. You know.
You're going to be a, like an intern.
The pay in college basketball is minutes.
Yeah.
You know.
Playing time. Because nobody sees practices. Everybody sees the games.
Yeah. Morning Rush is brought to you by Pinnacle Telecom. You know, for all of our high-speed internet needs, we turned to Pinnacle Telecom years ago because they brought fast fiber internet service to the door. They literally dug a trench, brought a backhoe out here, took the line from overhead where it was vulnerable in winter months and buried it underground into our building, eliminating one more need for a service call down the road if ice and winter storms or a tree fell and knocking out our internet line. One more thing Pinnacle Telecom did when they were designing our fast fiber internet service here at the Morning Rush Studios. They can take that type of care and concern and extra step for you because they offer the latest fiber optic technology. They are able to lower your phone bills with great phone systems as well and internet cost that they can custom design a plan for you. They can, it's not to get too technical, but they have a system. A lot of the national companies can only give you one speed up or down, upload, download speed. At Pinnacle Telecom, they're able with their advanced circuits to give you 500 megs of download speed and 50 megs of upload speed because that might be what best fits your business. Hey, just call them. They'd love to talk with you. 479-242-0000. All over our area, that's 479-242-0000 for Pinnacle Telecom.
Have I mentioned I like Eric Musselman and what he's doing at Arkansas? Has that been mentioned here on this show? Because I think this is just another reason to believe it and a reason to think that he is really going to accomplish great things at Arkansas. It's just stuff like this. And, you know, I start to see now some national media guys like John Rothstein, guys like Jeff Goodman, people who know college basketball and cover it, starting to mention Arkansas and starting to throw it out saying, hey, college basketball world, you need to check out these Razorbacks. They're 13-2. They're 2-1 in conference play. They're looking impressive. Might want to look at them a little bit. And those are the types of things that it's just incredible. It's absolutely incredible what he is able to accomplish. And hopefully he can keep it going.
And I didn't commit to memory the name of he had another 5-star planning to come in, but because of the weather last weekend, didn't do it. They're going to reschedule it. But that's the kind of, I just saw that on Twitter, but point being, he's getting noticed by the best players in the country. There's only a handful of 5-stars. And just, I'm going to tell you, where Arkansas's at, regardless of sport, to just get an official visit from enough 5-stars to kind of raise your eyebrows is impressive, because that's not easy to do just to get the OV there, to use that lingo.
The OV.
The OV. Makes me sound cool.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, so cool.
Yeah. So, but that's what he's able to do right now. He's getting these five stars to pay attention a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Out-of-state five stars. Not easy to do at Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And once get them to come, to just convince them to spend one of their official visits on you.
Yeah.
So they don't get an unlimited number of those.
Yeah.
Was it five?
And once they get it going and start not only having the success each season, but putting guys in the league, getting guys drafted, it's going to stand out to a lot of people. And they're going to start paying attention a lot more to Arkansas. I mean, it's just something you got to build up and continue to build into a monster. I mean, it's just... That's just the fact of the matter. So, again, I like what they're doing, though. I like the process that they're going through, the type of way that they're doing it. I mean, it's just week in and week out, if they can just keep this up this year and get those talented guys in next year, and just imagine if Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones stick around. Like somebody's going to have to leave, though, Tom, because I think with a scholarship situation, something's going to have to happen. Someone's going to have to transfer. Someone's going to have to leave early, something like that.
Yep.
For next year.
This is where honesty and being upfront mm-hmm. with somebody is, you know, pays off, I think.
Yeah.
Because I think it eliminates the people transferring out of your program that you want to keep within your program.
Mm-hmm. Because let's be honest, Tommy, it sounds harsh maybe at times, but I only want the best players on the team. You know, you don't need to waste scholarships. To waste anyone's time if you know that they're not going to play. Loyalty means a lot, I get it, but if you got kids over here that can come to your school right now and play and be a huge impact, you know, you may need to tell the guy that's on the bench that's been here for two or so years that's not doing anything, not developing, saying, you know what, maybe it's best for you to find another school to play at. Maybe it'd be better for you and best served for you to get your minutes elsewhere, because they're not happening here. It's a cutthroat league, man. And you got to have the results, and you got to have the success that comes along with it.
Where much is given, much is expected. And when you're paying coaches, you know, roughly three, and I don't think it'll be long till he's making over $3 million a year at Arkansas. In fact, that might be, I'm sure that is something Hunter Yurecek is already trying to maneuver and figure out and get some of these buyouts paid off to free up some money. Because, you know, particularly if this coach makes the tournament this year, I think you want to be proactive if you're Hunter Yurecek, and, you know, put a new deal on the table, not just an extension, but a raise, and make sure you head off any belief at all that he might look elsewhere, because he's going to start turning heads.
Would you trade Eric Musselman for any coach in the SEC right now?
You know, it's easy to say no on that.
It really is.
It's really easy right now to say no.
Not saying that he's the most
successful. There's some great coaches in this league.
Not saying he's the most successful coach in the SEC right now, but I don't know if I'd trade him, because the ceiling for him and the way that it's going for him right now, I don't think it can get any higher.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas, 80 yards.
Get you some good food. Mm-hmm. Get you some barbecue. Head over there and get some of their brisket tacos. Barbecue nachos, as I love. They have these fries, these seasoned fries, that are fantastic as well. Cannot go wrong with them. I mean, everything that you can get at Sassy's is phenomenal. I promise you that. You will not be disappointed. Go in there, tell them I sent you. Won't get you anything, probably anything special at least, but you'll at least know that I recommend it, because I have never been steering anyone wrong when it comes to food options. Maybe my sports opinions always are wrong, but I tell you what, my food options and my food opinions are never wrong, and Sassy's is as good as it gets. So head over there with their two locations in Fayetteville, off of College and off of Weddington. Speaking of Sassy, as Maddie T says, let's go to the phone lines. Welcome in Miss Lisa of Northeast Arkansas. What's going on, Miss Lisa?
Speaking of Sassy, boy, that was a good lead-in, too. No, don't worry about me getting mad when you have to go to commercial. I know what makes things tick, and it's not just the sports talk and the music you play. You bring up Musselman's quote. I heard that yesterday. And John, you're spot on about it. when I heard him say that, because I've worried all year long about, gosh, we don't have much depth. We don't have, we've only got eight, you know, blah, blah, blah. And when he said that, you know how when, like when you're in high school, multiplication or elementary, well, it took me into high school to learn them, but elementary school and you're doing multiplication tables, and when they finally hit, you think, wow, I've got it now. Well, yesterday when I heard him explain that, I had never thought of that. And my brain went, and yes, I have a brain, went ding, 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 ding. And I thought, we've got to wrap this coach up and put a ball on him. And but I had never, ever thought about that. And then I, you know, I forgot about the part about the AAU coaches, which drive me nuts, you know, leading these kids to go hither, thither, and yon. And I'm not going to get into that because I'll make some more enemies because some of them are right up here where I live. But I just that game Saturday, and I know you talked about it yesterday. I'm not trying to go back and rehash. But that game at the end, Coach Musselman, along with the players, but Coach Musselman just flat out coached Kermit Davis. Do you agree with me?
No, I totally agree with you. It was a the way that they ended that game, and even if you heard Eric Musselman talk about some of the presses that they did, that they haven't run all season long against Ole Miss, kind of threw a wrench into things. There was no doubt that Eric Musselman and his coaching was really, I mean, fueled by Isaiah Jones' great performance, but there's no doubt that Eric Musselman putting his guys in those positions is really what was the key to the game down the stretch.
Well, it sure was, and I was going to go, and at the last minute, we thought, well, we'll wait because, you know, we're going, and now I wished I'd have been down there. There were a lot of people from Northeast Arkansas down there, and they said the crowd actually was about 50-50. Now, I don't know, it wasn't there. That's what I was told. And then I'll say this and hang up. I agree with the lady that called before me. Well, what? That's pretty good. Two back-to-back women that called. We ought to get a free meal at Sassy's. What you think? But
just put it
anyway,
on John's tab. Just go in there and put it on neighbor's tab.
I think I'll do that. Yeah. I think I'll just walk in there and say, I'm here courtesy of John. Is that okay?
Yeah, just get after it. Yeah.
Okay, well, I'll get after it. That's no problem. But I am happy with Coach Pittman. I am happy with the hires, and I'm glad football season is over. I'm glad we've got that to look back on and something. In fact, I'm ready for April to get here and go to the spring football game. Y'all have a great show. Thank you for taking my call, and I'm loving Hog Sports right now. Well,
thank you for calling.
Thank you, as always, Miss Lisa, for calling. I mean, of all the comments that she made and talking about, you know, first off, the happiness that I think a lot of Razorback fans, or I wouldn't, maybe it's not just happiness, but it's more just hope, as we've talked about and how important it is when it comes to athletic programs. What you have with Eric Musselman is not just one of these things, Tommy, and you can disagree with me because I'm sure I know you remember it well. This does not feel like one of those things where John Pelfrey started off that second year of his with a bunch of new players that they weren't expected to do much, and they beat Oklahoma, they beat Texas. They start off 1-1 in SEC play, and everyone thought that that Arkansas was back and everything's just going to start rolling. It's not that. This hearing things like that, seeing things the way that this team plays and how they're coached and how they're built up and the mentality that they have and the buy-in that they have, it's more than just the wins. It's also the things that are surrounding the wins and how they're winning these games.
It's the best first year by a head coach in football or basketball since Houston Nutt in 98. And really, in my lifetime, there's only been about two great first years by head coaches in the two big sports. I mean, you stop and think about it. Let's put baseball aside because I don't.
You've only had two coaches like ever.
Right.
So
I don't think that really can qualify for this conversation. But you just go back to, you know, well, you start with Jack Crow first year. Well, we know how things went there. You know, 2 years in and 2 years in a game gone. You know, Danny Ford struggled but got him to the 95 title game thanks to some other help around the league. Houston Nutt had a great first year, Bobby Petrino struggled, didn't make a bowl his first year. We know about John L. in the 1 year, which really doesn't count.
And then Burt.
Petrino, I mean, there's just not been a lot of great first years. Now, this one's not over, and we can't define what this one is. You go through basketball. You know, we'd have to go back, but you know, no one made sweets. And to me, a great first year is not just tournament, but advancing. Well, we know that Arkansas hasn't advanced to the Sweet 16. Unfortunately, we know this stat since, what, 1996?
That's right.
So, we know there hadn't been any great first years. Now, I don't know that he's going to get to the tournament or the Sweet 16 or any of that, but this just feels like right here on the 14th day of January that this is like the greatest first-year start that Arkansas has seen by a new head coach in my lifetime in basketball. But we can't define it yet because the season's not even half over.
Right. And I would make the argument. And just
it's
bring
got
it up,
the potential to be.
Right. And John Pelfrey's first year was a good year because that was the first time they had won a tournament game in quite some time. But, he took
they
over.
Beat a bad Indiana team. They got there.
And then they got throttled by North Carolina and Tyler Hansborough. But they were still there. That was still a good year. But I'm telling you right now, folks, it's all about the expectation. Because even in that year of John Pelfrey, Tom, that team had like seven seniors on them that had been playing together for 4 years, had a guy named Patrick Beverly on it. I mean, me or you could have coached that team to the tournament. Just being honest. But this team, Tommy, this team was not, they were picked 11th to finish in the, they didn't have Daniel Gafford on this team coming back. They didn't have a recruiting class coming in that was just going to set the world on fire as freshmen. They didn't have any of that. Tommy, we came into this season talking about Arkansas basketball and saying, you know, if this team could just make it to the NIT, what a phenomenal year that would be. Because they don't have size, and their tallest player is 6'7". Yeah. Like, they don't have any of that.
Yeah.
And they are overcoming that. Why? You got to give credit to the players. But they're overcoming that because they have a coach and a coaching staff in play that is able to coach up their guys to be as good as what they are right now, to work on things, to maneuver things, to call up plays, to have strategies, philosophies, everything is working out because of coaching. So I'd be hard-pressed because those years you talked about, the Houston nut year and all that, those two coaches took over phenomenal talent.
Yeah.
I don't think Eric Musselle stepped in and just took over phenomenal talent like those other coaches did.
Eddie Sutton went 17-9 in his first year, 74-75.
Not bad.
11-3, finished second in the Southwest Conference. Nolan didn't fare very well in his first year.
Then you make the postseason, right?
12-16, finished seventh in the Southwest Conference. Stan Heath's first year, 02-03, 9-19, finished tied for fifth in the old SEC West. Let's see, John Pelfrey's first year, 2007-2008, 23-12, second in the West, and made it to the, as you said, second round of the NCAA, beaten by North Carolina. And then you look ahead, Mike Anderson's first year, it was in 2011-2012, 18-14, 6-10, ninth in the SEC. So, I don't know, still a ways to go. But it just feels like this has got the potential to be, you know, I don't know if it's an 8 equivalent to 8-0 that Nutt started, but we just haven't seen a lot of head coaches come out and get out of the gate the way this has.
Yeah.
The momentum that's being built. And I guess that's a better way of putting what I think I'm witnessing right now is some real forward momentum. I ain't always seen that with first-year head coaches.
Yeah. And again, the examples that we brought up were coaches that took over extremely talented programs like Houston Nutt in his first year. I'm not that's not discrediting those coaches. I'm not trying to discredit them. I'm just telling you that Houston Nutt and that squad that he took over 98 was chock full of high level talent across the board.
Danny Ford had set the table well.
Yes, he had. And John Pelfrey the same way. Stan Heath had recruited a bunch of guys. And again, you had two NBA style players there. You had Patrick Beverly and Sonny Weems on those teams. I mean, those were NBA players. And mixed in with some really high-level college players. Like, you had a good formula there. Eric Musselman has come in this year. And Mason Jones, Isaiah Joe, great players. Jimmy Witt's been in a nice breath of fresh air. Adriel Bailey has elevated his game big time. But these aren't sure bona fide NBA players.
No.
Most of these guys probably won't even go in the pros, but he has found a way to put them and work on them into the position to put them at where at now. I mean, it's really incredible.
Mm-hmm.
It's really incredible. It'd be one thing if that Mike Anderson just left. If he had Daniel Gaffer this year, had left him, and then they had a big recruiting class come in at the last minute, that'd be one thing. But you didn't. You took over a guy where all of us said this is going to be a rebuilding year.
Well,
this is going to be tough.
He's taken Mason Jones, who is a good. I don't know. Is Mason Jones a great player? He's one of the better players in this league right now. I
don't say he's a great player, but I mean, he's not
elite nationally, but he's a very, very good player.
He's all SEC caliber.
He's elevated his game.
Yeah. He's a high-level SEC player.
You know, Isaiah Joe made 100 threes a year ago. I mean, we already knew the guy could shoot. He's improved his game. I still think the best example of what Musselman and his staff have done is what they've done with Adriel Bailey.
Yep, that's the number one example.
But the two players on this team now, they are not 13-2 without Bailey, but they're certainly not anywhere near 13-2 without Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones. And both of those guys have, all three of those mm-hmm. guys have dramatically improved under this coaching staff.
And with the addition of Jimmy Witt, I mean, he's been that glue guy too. So it's just.
And you're not getting, if Mike Anderson had gotten another year, Jimmy Witt's still at SMU.
No. In fact, you're playing the Hill kid. That was originally committed. Fitz Hill.
Yeah.
This kid.
Yeah.
Justice. Thank you. I couldn't remember his first name. But yeah, you're playing Justice Hill probably. And no offense to Justice, but Jimmy Witt's a much better player. And being able to insert him instead has been huge. It's been absolutely huge. And that's been the difference maker for this team. It's Toyota Tuesday here on the Morning Rush. Be sure to check out all new 2020 Toyota vehicles at your local Arkansas Toyota dealer, including the Highlander with plenty of room up to 8 people. Stylish new Corolla, the work-ready family Tough Tundra, and the go-anywhere 4Runner. Toyota, let's go places. And let's go to the phone lines. Dale is in Mountain Home. What's going on, Dale?
Well, I was listening to what Musselman said, and I just had a different perspective that I don't think it's the 9 through 13 kids he had to talk to their parents or their AAU coaches. I think it's the starters that were thinking, why is he setting me down and let someone else come out there and get embarrassed? And, you know, we've seen our former coach get somebody hot making points and then set them down to let them rest so they can come back and do it again. And then they didn't do so good. But I think it's the starters or the first four that are upset because they're not getting playing time. They're better, and they think they can do a better job. And really, I think that 9 through 13 probably doesn't want to go out there and maybe lose the game or start getting the score caught back up.
Yeah, well, and Dale, I think I agree with you, and I think it's a combination of both, too, because that was something that Eric Musselman talked about, is having his starters, having his big-time guys play through their mistakes, play through their bad shooting nights, play through it to where they learn more from it. They continue to build that confidence with themselves. They don't let up. And that's something that he also makes sure that when a guy starts struggling, if Isaiah Joe starts 0-5 from three-point land, he's not taking Isaiah Joe out of the game. He's not telling Isaiah Joe to stop shooting threes. He's not doing that, because he knows what Isaiah Joe is capable of, and all it takes is a spark, is a shot. That'll change everything. And so I think that's a good point, is that he also lets his starters battle through. He does not punish them when they start off slow or don't get it going as well. He lets them play through their mistakes, Dale.
I agree.
Yeah.
But I was just thinking, you were talking about the expectations of the new guys, whether they were redshirted or... I was just thinking that probably he had more of an issue with the starters setting them down and not getting to have as many minutes rather than the guys at the end of the line.
Yeah, no, that, I agree with you totally, and appreciate the phone call, Dale. 877-377-6963. Let's go back to the phone lines. Sterling is in Center Ridge. What's going on, Sterling?
Oh, nothing much, guys. You talk about Nut team in his first year. I mean, let's not get it twisted now. That team wasn't predicted to win the SEC West by no means. That the team had a little talent, but it's our revisionist history with the talent. Going into that season, when he was hired, nobody said, well, he's taking over a talented team and we're looking for this team to win 7 to 8 games. They were coming off back-to-back 4-7 seasons, and all the state wanted to do was, could you please just beat SMU? Please beat SMU.
You're right. That's all. You're right.
If you just beat SMU, that'd be a start. We it's the same thing they were saying here with Musselman's team. It was rebuilding. Now 20 years back, you look back and you see what they did, and you know, I mean, some Hawk fans will say, "Hey, if we take care of business in Knoxville, who knows what happened?" But we know it was a talented team because we saw it. Going into that season, nobody said Danny Ford. Boy, we might not have let Danny coach this team. He done recruited a great talent here. We ought to let him coach it. No one was saying that now. Let's not act like going into that season that Nutt was taking over a talented bunch and he was supposed to take this team to a quality bowl game that season. Nobody predicted a bowl that season. No one. I mean, not no one now.
Yeah, well,
we know now, it wasn't talent on there, and maybe he infused the motivation to the talent. But I'm just amazed how a home boy like that can't get much credit for that turnaround. Besides just being enthusiastic.
Well, Sterling, and the only thing I'll disagree with you on, because I've talked to people that were covering as far as recruiting goes. I've talked to guys like Dudley Dawson who have told me that they, like, everyone knew, at least from the people that covered the sport, how much talent there was. It was just like a dead in the water type of thing. There wasn't the energy, there wasn't the vibe, there wasn't the chemistry. They just weren't having fun. They weren't playing. They wasn't a good fit for the type. They had talent, but they just didn't have the chemistry and the build and the strategy for being successful in the conference. But a lot of people, and Danny Ford even said it, that whoever takes over this team, whoever's the next coach, is going to inherit a lot of talent. Now, say it's coach speak, say it's cliche, whatever it is. But I agree with you. And again, I was not trying to discredit Houston Nutt. I am just saying that he inherited a very healthy veteran roster that had a lot of experienced guys like Madre Hill, Chris Chikuma, Clint Sterner, Anthony Eubanks, Anthony Lucas, Joe Dean Davenport, Zach Painter, Kanoy Kennedy, David Barrett. He had a lot of great talent, and a lot of them were upperclassmen. But I'm not taking anything away from Nutt. I'm just saying that it's always helpful when you have a lot of talent and guys that have been playing a long time on your roster that you inherit.
Fair enough. They may have said they had some good talent, but they weren't predicting what happened that season.
No, no, I agree. They were picked sixth in the West. They were dead last.
They were picked at the bottom of the West. They can say what they want about the talent, but they didn't pick it to finish in the top half of the division.
Mm-hmm. No, that's true. That's absolutely
true.
They
didn't do that. Now I know that. They didn't do it publicly.
Yeah. No, I
magazines, the articles they write.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. I understand. They were not, no one is expecting to happen what happened. No one expected to have a chance to be playing for a national championship at any point in time that year. That's for sure.
Great job, guys. Have a great show.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Sterling. But that, again, I'm not trying to discredit him or Pelfrey or any of the guys. I know people have been texting and saying Lou Holtz
went 11-1 in 1977. I was born the last day of 75. We were talking about just in my memorable lifetime. Yeah. So Lou Holtz, 11-1 in 1977, should certainly be, and is in the conversation for many of you out there. So.
And again, he did a phenomenal job, not taking anything away. But don't you think it helps when you inherit some talent? I mean, it does for anybody.
Yeah.
It absolutely does.
I'm just saying that this just feels like the momentum is moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he also took over a good, solid program here at Arkansas.
A healthy program. I agree.
With not a lot of academic issues and off-the-floor issues. And
APR issues. You
know, all those things. Absolutely.
Yeah. Mike Anderson was the one that had to take over a program like that. But Eric Musselman, without having those obstacles to overcome, you're seeing some of the results from him.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, gluten-free with no artificial flavors.
Now he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number 3, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hogs!
Let's go to the phone lines and welcome in Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Good morning, Tom. I want to start with the national championship game last night. What'd you make of that game now that LSU is officially crowned national champions?
Hey, guys. It's good to be with you. What a great game between two championship teams. I got a lot of family who likes Clemson. My sister's husband played golf there, and a lot of family who loves LSU. So it was just a real fun game to watch. And I love the fact that LSU had to you know, had to hang in there through some adversity. Brent Venables and Clemson really studied them up well, and I love the way they came at it with pressure. And I'm sure y'all saw that stat that the QB was 90% completion rate against rush three and drop eight. And so just what a fantastic game. And Clyde Edwards-Helaire, love the way that kid runs. It seems like he breaks a tackle on every play. And 60 touchdown passes in one season for Burrow. I just kept running the numbers in my head over and over and over. That's four touchdowns a game for 15 games.
Yeah, just do the math. 60. Yeah.
So when you think about what Colt Brennan did at Hawaii, you think back to those days, and it's like, okay, this is an offense that may not fit well in the power conferences. It's against inferior defenses, so no one will really approach the 58 touchdown passes he threw. No, Joe Burrow just did it. He was in games late against, like, Alabama and still having to compete, and so he's racking up touchdowns. And then against some of the lesser teams, he throws, like, seven touchdowns and a half. So it's a miraculous miracle season, magical season, I should say, for LSU. They'll be really good next year, but I just don't think they'll be able to put it all together like they did this year.
And that was what I was going to ask you. What do you think the future is with Joe Burrow likely to become the number one quarterback taken in the draft? How long can they sustain this? Because you know Alabama's not sitting over there on their hands thinking, well, our era's over. This is going to be an interesting situation to see how Alabama responds next year and what LSU can do to keep this momentum going.
It really will. The charge for the rest of the SEC West right now is to find a way to defend against what LSU does. And what put it over the top this year was the fact that Burrow could avoid the rush more than a lot of guys can, and then keep his eyes downfield. Many times last night, you know, they sacked him several times, but many times they disrupted the play within 2 seconds. And he's having to first elude someone and then scan the field. He made one of the biggest plays of the game was the kind of the broken play pass to Thaddeus Moss in the fourth quarter. So that happened numerous times, and it happened all year long. So I'm not sure whatever quarterback they plug in is going to be able to do that. But you're right. Alabama's not going away. Auburn's still trying to build, and they've got a nice young quarterback. Texas A&M. Is going to keep striving and keep recruiting. And LSU's recruiting is just going to stay the same, and it's great. This is what the Arkansas Razorbacks and Sam Pittman are up against, that the rest of your division, the toughest in all of college football, is playing at a level that no other division can match, and it's recruiting that well, and has schemes that are on the very cutting edge of all of college football.
Speaking with Tom Murphy of the Arkansas Democrat Gazette right now in the Morning Rush. All right, Tom, let's switch gears a little bit and talk about this Razorback basketball team. What a win they had on Saturday against Ole Miss on the road. This team continues just to impress. They continue to make plays down the stretch. And this is a big week where they have Vanderbilt tomorrow night. And, of course, the big one going to be Kentucky at home and Bud Walton on Saturday. I mean, first, just what do you think of that game against Ole Miss? Because, to me, this team and showing just how they don't flinch, they don't give up, they always expect to win, and the confidence that they have is just really, really encouraging if you're a Razorback fan.
Pretty astounding. I don't know if you guys went there mentally as I did, but when they were down 8 or 9, and, you know, they cut it down to like 5, and then Ole Miss would push it back up, and I remember thinking that Musselman was so proud that even the LSU game, he said, man, we could be undefeated. You know, our team – There are teams that would be in our shoes who at some point they'd get down like that and they would kind of fall apart and they'd lose by 12 or 13 points. And I allowed myself to think, well, so much for that line of thought, you know, because this is a game where it looks like Ole Miss is just going to keep on. And lo and behold, I asked him that very question last night or yesterday, and he said they changed their defenses. They safeguarded Bree and Tyree. And then Desi Sills would then double up on the other guard, and he called it shadow and hit defenses, and it worked. And suddenly Ole Miss did not have good offensive possessions, and Arkansas rebounded just well enough on the defensive boards,
you know, they got a 4-point play from Joe and he heated up and they come back and win the game. They are really amazing the way their mental fortitude late in games, and they showed it now in a bunch of different games. I keep thinking though, they're going to run into a team, and Kentucky's the one that got me worried, that's going to keep driving, dribble driving and penetrating and getting in the lane and drawing fouls the way Ole Miss did and the way some other teams have. But it's just amazing where they are. And the weird part about Kentucky coming up Saturday is these guys are going to hear all about how big that game is, and they can't let this Vanderbilt game slip under the radar, because y'all know Vandy played Auburn a great game last week on the road. So, you know, they're capable. Even though Aaron Neesmith is out, they're still a good team.
Well, that was my next question. Is Wednesday night a trap game with Vanderbilt? So how do you avoid falling victim to the trap game? Because Vanderbilt, statistically, one of the lower teams in the conference. Net rankings, they're outside like 120. I think 123 the last I looked. How do you avoid the pitfalls of a game like this when you're looking ahead, and it's just human nature to see that big opportunity on Saturday with the Kentucky Wildcats?
Yeah, you have to reduce the big picture, which is, holy smokes, we're doing a lot of good things, and we've got a chance to play in the NCAA tournament. We got Kentucky coming up. You have to reduce that down to the little picture, which is, if we think the big way, we're not going to get past this game. And they can shoot the three. Saban Lee's a good one. They're young, big dudes, have played well against A&M or playing better. So just focus on this game. And the good thing for Arkansas is they're veteran enough that guys like Jimmy Witt and Mason Jones can pass that along to the whole team. They still got a lot of wrinkles and issues to figure out. You know, it's very concerning to me that beyond Adriel Bailey, when they put Reggie Caney in or Dental Silla got more minutes the other day, they're just not getting a ton of production. I mean, one for four from the free throw line by Silla. Well, great, he drew the foul and he looked aggressive, but you got to make those free throws. So,
Tom, really appreciate it, man. Sorry we're up against it. We'll catch up with you on Thursday. More Morning Rush coming up next.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Follow the show on Twitter at HitThatLineAR.
I am happy to announce that, according to Tommy Kraft here during the break, that for all of you that ever want to criticize his officiating, he went to the eye doctor yesterday, and they told him that he has 20/20 vision in one eye.
Particularly in the left eye.
In the left eye. So your left eye's your
good eye. Like
your left eye's your good eye.
Yeah.
And then,
foul!
But you still have good vision also in your other eye, too. So, you know, if everybody...
I have to, you know, if you watch on the video stream, you see me putting these reading glasses on and off ad nauseum through the show, because we've had all these little scripts and things and all this stuff I got to read.
Mm-hmm.
I'm telling you, these phones and these tablets are ruining all of our eyesight.
I hope
my
not.
Eyes never had any problem. Mm-hmm. I never needed these cheaters, I call them,
cheers,
until, you know, you get to a point where you live your life looking at your phone.
Yeah.
All that eye strain and going back and forth focusing.
God almighty. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I can do it if I want to take the extra 15 seconds to focus in, but no.
You don't want to.
I'm too lazy. I'm too impatient. Lazy's not the right word. I'm too impatient.
Yeah.
So
if there's any bad calls, it's just because he's in, you know, in cahoots with the other referees.
Oh, that,
it's,
yeah,
not,
yeah,
it's not his vision.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Maybe my judgment's off.
You can't blame the vision.
That eliminates
there's
one excuse.
A lot of other reasons.
A lot of other reasons I missed it.
Yeah. Well, I like to do my impression of you for Betty out there when anytime you're about to just have as I like to call it, a proclamation. It's you're sitting there and you have your glasses on, you're reading something, and you just go, hey. And now I know when you take off the glasses, it's about to be something that's
about to deliver knowledge.
Yes, it's about to be something to be preached.
It's like the opening of a CSI episode.
Yeah.
He takes his glasses.
Yeah, I mean, these came from Walmart. These aren't really glasses.
They're really just a prop.
They came from the neighborhood market. Yeah, it's just plexiglass in there. Yeah, I just wear them to look smarter.
Well, it's not working. So, but.
I wear them to sound smarter, John.
Yeah.
Is that working?
No.
Nah,
sure.
Pair,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Sure.
I need a stronger lens there, son.
I'm knocking on wood. I don't have to have glasses yet.
You wait. So. I'm telling you. About you're 31 now. You wait about 10 or 11 years. I never had problems reading anything. I mean, I could read the fine print on a, you know, on the back of a manual from 50 yards. I mean, no problem. And then like 42 years old, 41, 42, I woke up one morning, I couldn't see that stuff anymore.
Mm.
I'm telling you, it'll happen to you earlier, I think, because you've grown up looking phones at a damn phone your whole life, you know?
It was about 32 or 33, I realized I couldn't read, like, subtitles, you know, on the television stuff. Or playing video games, I couldn't read the text, you know, when I was reading it. So
I, again, knocking on wood, I'm good now.
He said, so. Dr. Stiles said yesterday, the key to all of it is blinking a lot. It's like rebooting your eyes.
So now you're
blink a lot.
Keeps them nice and moist.
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
Okay, now you're going to make me think about blink it. I'm going to start just blinking.
I'm going to walk around doing this.
Crazy. Like, everyone's going to think I'm having like a seizure or something like that. Because I'm going to be walking around like just epilepsy over here.
Doctor said you should blink a lot.
Yeah, everyone's going to be concerned for me. But all right, so that's the key. Yeah, you heard it here first from Tommy Kraft. Not
more
blinking. And guess what? Guess what? Tommy Kraft took off his glasses to say that.
He's more blinking,
yeah. More blinking. More blinking helps the eyesight.
Hell, I thought he said more drinking.
Hey, either one would probably be able to help you out.
Drinking will help your eyesight too. Yeah,
it all helps you out.
It helps you see double of everything.
Exactly, it doubles everything up.
Yeah, makes it always better. Yeah. That's the case. So we've had some fun here on the show. We've been talking a lot of different things today, and I wanted to get into this one because we're going to get into Dubs and Scrubs here in just a second, but. We mentioned it, and I want to talk about it again, that former Houston quarterback, De'Eriq King, officially announced that he's going to be transferring out of Houston, looking for a new spot. He's going to be a graduate transfer, going to be eligible immediately. And the big name that's getting thrown around, this comes from ESPN.com, Sam Kahn Jr. He's saying that Arkansas is the favorite for the landing spot for De'Eriq King. We've seen some players that are currently on the roster for Arkansas kind of tweet at him and quote tweet and say, hey, man, come up to Fayetteville. And if you want to have an idea of what stats are looking like, he accounted for more than 7,000 yards across multiple positions. He didn't always just play quarterback. But his best season came in 2018 when he played primarily as a quarterback, where he accounted for 50 touchdowns. 50. He threw for 3,000 yards and rushed for 674. He also has 82 career touchdowns responsible since 2016. And in that 2018 season, Tommy, who was his offensive coordinator and quarterback coach?
Kendall Briles.
Yeah. So there's the connection for you. Again, it's not a guarantee that he will be coming to Arkansas. It's not even a guarantee that he's even interested in playing for Briles once again. But when you have things like that, they get thrown around a little bit as far as the connections and relationships. Definitely makes you think about it. And also makes you think about that if Arkansas was able to pull that off and get a guy like De'Eriq King to come to Arkansas, what kind of extra spark that would provide this upcoming football season that people would feel a lot better about the quarterback position. Not saying KJ Jefferson couldn't do it, but just you need to add somebody. You got to add depth. Why not go out and get a guy that's put up the numbers and had the seasons and had the type of athleticism that De'Eriq King had. Makes sense to me.
No, I mean, in the familiarity, I go back to know, like, and trust a lot. And, you know, if Kendall Briles and King have a great relationship, there's know, like, and eventually trust, might be a good fit.
Yeah, I'm sure that Kendall Briles is going to be looking at him, but we don't know anything specific. We'll have Richard Davenport on with us on Thursday for Recruiting Thursday. We'll talk to him about it. Maybe he knows more about the situation, more of the interest. Maybe there's something developed out at that point in time now that it's been officially announced. Maybe there's a visit in store. We don't know, but we'll talk with Richard Davenport about that more on Thursday, see what the update will be for that. All right, let's go ahead and jump right into Dubs and Scrubs here on The Morning Rush.
Some people were born to get dubs.
I'm hollering loud because I can back up every word. And I'll whoop any man in the world. And I want everybody out there on TV to know it. I am the greatest.
Others were born to be scrubs.
These guys, I don't know if we're going to be able to beat anybody this year.
Don't listen to him, Hank. He's a loser.
Good thing we get to decide who gets dubs and who's the scrubs on The Morning Rush.
All right, it's time for Scrubs and Dubs here on The Morning Rush, brought to you by Williams Tractor.
Yeah, New Holland Dealer Days are back in Williams. Tractor is opening their doors to help you tackle the season ahead. Special preseason savings available right now that include 0% financing and cash back offers on select New Holland hay tools, tractors, and material handling equipment. If you're thinking about trading in, now's a great time to do that during New Holland Dealer Days. So stop by Williams Tractor in Fayetteville, Berryville, or Bobcat in Northwest Arkansas today and learn about all the preseason savings that are going on now.
All right, so we'll go ahead and kick it off. I'll give my dub, and I think it's to the obvious person that you got to give the dub to, and that's to Joe Burrow. I mean, the season that he had this year was nothing short of phenomenal.
60 touchdown passes. And here's another thing, too, that I know that, again, I got in arguments with people yesterday, which is fine. You know, the discussion of who's the better quarterback, who's the greatest quarterback I have ever seen. You know, Cam Newton up to this point was the greatest quarterback. And he may still be in a lot of people's minds. But the thing about Cam Newton is he was just so athletically gifted. He could beat you with his legs. He could beat you with his arm. He was the full package, which was incredible. But I almost appreciate and respect and even give Joe Burrow the nod when it comes to the greatest quarterback I've ever seen, because he didn't have those elements of his legs. He didn't have, I mean, he could run if he needed to, but it certainly wasn't because of his physical prowess either. He did it with his arm, and that's it. Mm-hmm. He had great players around him, great wide receivers. I don't discount that. But not only did he put up the numbers that he did with those great players, he did it going up against arguably one of the most difficult college football schedules you could ever have, and he showed up in those games big time. Tommy, in those seven games they played against the top opponents that finished, or guess what was the stat? Five of the opponents that finished in the top 10, they beat. He did not throw a single interception against any of them. Sorry. The guy is, to me, the greatest quarterback that I've ever seen play the position.
Golic and Wingo were going over his stats in those five games against the teams that finished in the top 10. You know, the Clemsons, the OUs,
Alabama.
The Alabamas. You know, he was like 72% completion percentage.
That's stupid.
He played his best against the best. So, I mean, I don't know if he's the greatest college quarterback of all time, but it may be the greatest single season by a college quarterback ever. You can separate those two. There is a difference there. And it may be the single best season ever by a college quarterback.
I mean, I don't know if you'll ever be able to top that. Because, again, he threw for over 5,600 yards. The next SEC quarterback to get close to that was 4,500. He threw for over, now I get that he had an extra game because, you know, a lot of these quarterbacks didn't have that extra game, but still, throw for over 1,100 yards more than the next quarterback in the SEC and doing it by playing some of the best competition in the country. It's just, I don't know if we'll ever see anything like it. So my dub, 100%, goes to Joe Burrow. And also, thrill add another caveat, I like the attitude that he had. Sitting there smoking a cigar, just puffing it up right there after the game.
Yeah,
I mean, that was great.
So Ed Orgeron's my dub.
Got to give it to him, too.
Because all the doubters, all the people that said,
I was one of them.
And I was kind of right there along with you, that this guy can't get it done. He won't get it done at LSU. Bad hire. I know he fits the state and the people, but, you know, it was a little rough at first.
Yeah. Troy.
Got the coordinators around him that he needed, put the staff in place, and, you know, just to overcome all the people that said, this guy will never do it. Look at his record at Ole Miss. Look at what this guy has done everywhere he's had, even the interim job at USC where things went well, but not enough to get LSU to where it needs to be in this division. You know, he probably doesn't do it. In fact, I'd say he doesn't do it if Joe Burrow doesn't come there.
Right.
But give Ed Orgeron all the credit. And then he's on with Scott Van Pelt last night. Did you see this? He was asked how he was going to celebrate.
Well, we just go back to the hotel and going to have a ham sandwich.
Give me a ham sandwich with the family.
He said, a ham sandwich? Yeah, he just won the national title. A ham sandwich?
Not only that, but he says, we're going to wake up. We're going to do it again tomorrow.
Yeah.
All right. Probably wouldn't be what I did if I won the national championship, Tommy.
I am sandwich.
I'd go turkey sandwich. You know, yeah. That would be what I did. But no, Eddie O, man, how do you not like the guy? Here's the thing,
and
too.
I love how he'll give a statement. You know, Tom Rinaldi asked him a question or someone, and then he gives his answer. And, you know, Joe Burrow this, and Joe Burrow that, and he's the best quarterback. And he really did. Go Tigers.
Yep.
And then he just kind of bows that chest out. And
has a little smirk.
That smirk or that smile.
Go
Tigers. It's just awesome.
Go Tigers.
Yeah. Go Tigers.
He's awesome, man.
And he just kind of puts that grin on. Yeah.
Big football guy.
It's like his chest muscles and his smiling muscles are connected because when he smiles, his shoulders go back, his smile goes up. So
yeah,
you just got to love it. He just kind of stands there like he's on guard or something.
Oh, yeah. No,
that's great.
It's fantastic. And the thing about that has been also really impressive about Eddie O is he was at USC as an interim. We all remember that. And he did really good as an interim. But Tommy, I don't think he does this at USC if he's given that job. I don't think he even gets close to that, because as we know so many times, especially in college football, it's about the fit. It's about the fit. Ed Orgeron fits.
He speaks
in LSU. Yeah, well, I mean, he fits. You know, he doesn't fit in USC. He doesn't fit in Southern California.
He's from south of New Orleans. Now, most people don't even know there's actually
such a thing
as south of New Orleans. Everybody thinks, well, that's just the Gulf of Mexico. Well, actually, there's not. You know, there's a lot of the bayou and a lot of fishing communities and a lot of great places to go red fishing down south of New Orleans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where he's from, where, I mean, they are Cajuns down there.
They all talk like Ed Orgeron down there.
I mean, he's one of them. You ever been down that way?
I have not ventured, no.
I have ventured a couple of times down to Venice, Louisiana.
How'd you feel?
And that is true Cajun country, man. Mm-hmm.
Good food.
And the food really good down there.
Gumbo.
Yeah.
I love Ed Orgeron. You talk about, I love hearing people talk. He's one of those. Again, I've said this before, I'll say it again. If a rock could talk, it would sound like Eddie O.
We need to get... Remember the old Fat Albert cartoons back in the day?
Yeah.
Need that, and then Ed Orgeron will play them side by side, and you tell me which one's which.
Mm-hmm. Or what you need to start doing is start having competitions when we do, maybe, I don't know, some sort of giveaway or whatnot, and we just say, all right, we're going to play you a clip, and you have to translate it correctly. First try.
Yeah.
You just got to say whatever he's saying. Whatever he's trying to say, you say it.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that would be a difficult competition. But, yeah, it's a great dub. Two
good dubs there.
Yeah, both to Joe Burrow and Eddie O. That's been huge. My scrub, I just want to do this again because he's just a good punching bag to have. Brett Bielema. Because
if you're not wore that out yet,
no, because
right now comparing him to the size of a punching bag.
I mean, he'd be a big old punching bag. He'd be like in Rocky when he goes into the meat manufacturing place and doing that. Probably be more.
I don't think Bielema was quite that firm. But,
probably not. But my hand would get lost. Isaiah Simmons, the player that he is on Clemson. Yeah.
This is a good one.
He is phenomenal. Phenomenal. He has been arguably the best player on Clemson's defense this year. He's played every position on defense but defensive tackle. Like, who does that in this day and age? Who can play safety and also play defensive end?
Yeah.
You know, and linebacker, cornerback. He's played all those positions. Just a gifted athlete that runs a 4-3, extremely athletic, and he was showcasing his ability last night. Got a couple sacks on Joe Burrow and got a few hurries on him. Brett Bielema didn't want him in Arkansas.
Mm-mm.
Didn't want him. He wanted to come to Arkansas.
It's his dream school.
It was his dream school.
Good for him.
I am happy for
him. It worked out splendidly for him.
I am. And I'm happy for him. Obviously, it worked out. But it just, those types of things just boil my nuggets when I see that there was a player like him or like a Trey Norwood or like so many players over the past 7 or 8 years that wanted to come to Arkansas. Or at least were very interested in Arkansas, and no effort was put forth to them to come. You know, and I know that it's because it's in the cut next few years, Tommy. I may be saying that about the being mad at Chad Morris for the Jacoby Criswell deal. Like, if he goes on and to North Carolina and balls out, it's going to infuriate me.
And the 2022 Heisman Trophy winner is from North Carolina. We're just going to.
Mm-hmm. There are going to be articles written saying his dream school was to play for Arkansas,
but dadgum Chad Morris.
I'm telling you, so I know it's going to happen because that's Arkansas. That's the most Arkansas thing. And again, it's nothing against the current staff because current staff couldn't do anything about it, but they tried once they got in there. But it continues to just infuriate me how completely and totally oblivious that Brett Bielema was, especially when it came to evaluating talent, especially in this state. There were guys that wanted to be here that were talented enough, and you told them no. So guess what? They went on to some other bigger, better program to reap the reward and end up working out. And where are you at, Brett Bielema? You're the defensive line coach of the Patriots, probably never to be another head coach again because you really got yourself disgraced in the coaching circles, especially in college football.
We don't have to have solutions to our dubs. We can just have.
Yeah. This is just throwing crap out. Yeah, who cares?
Monday night, we got to figure out a way to get this college football national championship game off a weeknight.
Man, retweet.
Now, I don't know how we're going to do it because we got wild card games the weekend before, and they want to play Saturday and Sunday in the NFL. We've got the divisional playoffs Saturday and Sunday. this past weekend, it's kind of like you're forced into Monday night, and they want to have the showcase. But, man.
We could delay the morning rush like 2 hours.
That would be nice.
How can we figure out a way? Because that's my scrub here is biggest college football game of the year. I think the second biggest football game of the year, I think it's the Super Bowl
and then
this national championship
game. I do, too.
How do we get this baby on a weekend night?
You know, when the college football games are played.
Like on a Saturday night.
Yeah. The NFL does it on Sundays.
I know that the deal is, well, the NFL playoffs are on Saturdays and Sundays. Well, I know that.
But that's not the big game.
How do we work around this?
Yeah. Find a solution to it, which I'm with you. I don't know the solution, but we talked about that. I believe it was last year on this show when they had it doesn't make sense. It does not make sense.
Well, I've been fighting the fight, and I'm going to fight it again here in a few weeks of Super Bowl Saturday versus Super Bowl Sunday.
Oh, yeah. I'm with you.
And it falls on deaf ears every year. And a lot of you out there, oh, that's tradition, Super Bowl Sunday. Listen, there's nothing traditional about dragging your butt into work on a Monday morning or not being able to stay till the end of the party on a Sunday night
because
you got a radio show to do the next morning. So I don't know how we do this. I mean, I just think you could take the event and the sport up a notch or two.
Yeah.
If we could figure out how not to play it on a weeknight.
No. I feel like every major, and I understand that in baseball and NBA and stuff like that, you're going to have series of games, so it's a little more difficult. But I feel that every single title game in every major sport, especially professionally and even in the college level, should be played on Saturday.
Yep.
Every single one.
Super Bowl Saturday is a real thing.
It needs to happen. If it's a game seven of whatever league, find a way to get on a Saturday.
Yep.
Like, it just makes too much sense. Mm-hmm. We got to find a way to make that work.
I totally agree. And I don't, again, how you could work it out with the NFL, I don't know. How the NFL could play more games in one day, I don't know. Maybe there doesn't need to be a two-week layoff for college football. I don't know. We just don't need to play on a Monday night. That's the one thing I do know.
Retweet. You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer, available in black cherry, strawberry, lemon, lime, and mango.
Give is to Alex Collins straight up the middle, and Collins on the run. They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house. Touchdown, Arkansas.
Yeah, a few people that have been texting in to the Morning Rush, 877-377-6963. I saw that Tommy just responded to him. Paul in the Fort was asking you how many different kinds of beans he use in his homemade chili.
Yep, two or three. Ranch-style beans are my favorite kind to put in chili because the sauce that's in the can with the ranch-style beans, and don't skimp and get the best value on the ranch-style. Go ahead and get the good ones. They even have some that have the zesty jalapenos in there, or you can get ones that have the red peppers, the bell peppers already in there. Get the ranch style beans, then you can add whatever you like. I prefer chili beans or kidney beans, but that's just me.
Do you prefer beans in your chili?
Absolutely.
What about you, Maddie? Do you prefer beans in your chili?
Absolutely, and I like three beans in my chili. Yeah, what I don't like as much, and I didn't say this to the I don't like the big chunks of tomatoes in it, though, you know?
I like the stewed tomatoes.
I need less tomatoes.
But, you know, I'm with you on
our
that,
man
Maddie.
Stan brought a pot of chili. And he had no beans last week. I can go eat away.
It was good, too.
And but if you're going to do beanless chili, you got to, and he does it right because he chops up the meat really good.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife found a good life hack on that, I guess. Use the blender.
For the
Y'all
meat?
Have one of those super duper like ninja blenders too.
Yeah, it's a Vitamix.
Yeah, I found that out when I was trying to make my salsa over there. Yeah. Just pureed the whole thing like in 2 seconds.
You gotta be careful. It's powerful. But yet you use the blender. You can use a food processor, I'm sure, to get the meat evenly chopped.
Yeah.
That's really key.
Yeah. Because I'm with you too. I don't like the big chunks of tomatoes.
I'm not real picky on my chili.
I'm not either.
Around them and then all that's left is just a big clumps of tomatoes.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not picky either. I'm going to eat chili if it's chili, but
I'll add the crushed tomatoes, the diced, and the stewed into mine because I like coming across not a lot of stewed tomatoes, but just a nice chunk of it here and there.
Mm-hmm. Do you add cheese into your chili?
Cheese,
like in your single bowl by itself. Because I have to do that.
I don't need it, but I will do it.
Yeah, one of the secret ingredients to a good pot of chili when you're making the chili is mustard. Got to give a couple good squirts.
I've seen people do that.
I do it. Something about the vinegar and the mustard that offsets some of the other stuff in there. The acid maybe in the tomatoes. I don't know. But that's the other thing there, Paul. Glad we could take your question on this.
Mm-hmm.
Paul, a couple good squirts of some good mustard in there.
Mm-hmm. Talking about just French yellow it. Mustard?
You yeah, just good yellow. Just, mustard, no, okay. no, just good.
French's.
Just
French's.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
None of this Grey Poupon.
No. Mm-hmm. Just basic, standard, 98 cents a jar of mustard.
Okay.
Yeah, because you don't go hog wild on it. Just a couple good squirts.
Yeah. Are you a Frito pie guy then?
Well, who's not? Yeah. I like the scoops. Now, if we're going to go Fritos, we go scoops.
Well, it depends on how you like to eat it, though. You like to eat it like nachos if you're doing the scoops then, right?
I just think scoops are better than regular Fritos.
Now, as far as Frito pie goes, then cheese is mandatory.
You have to have cheese. Yeah.
Cheese is mandatory.
Some people like to throw on the onions, throw in the stuff that will give you heartburn forever. I mean, that's...
Great question, Paul.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we could talk about food and chili and all of that
this
stuff.
Isn't the first time I've gotten how to make pot of chili questions on the show.
How much of our conversation during breaks and stuff is all about food,
You know, all of them. Like 85%.
Least, yeah. Yeah. Now, that's why I'm like, I'm dying at the end of the show because I'm just starving to death and I got to like convince myself.
It's
lunch
appointment. Only 9 o'clock in the morning.
And yeah, and it's like, oh, I could just go for a big foot-long coney.
Yeah.
You know.
For breakfast.
For breakfast.
It's, where's my Sonic app?
Yeah, I could totally do that, so.
Is it too early?
Yeah.
It's just a snack.
Oh, man. See, like, that's... Because chili, when you put it on hot dog, you put chili on hot dogs, right? Too, yeah. I mean, you got to do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a bear poop in the woods.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for cleaning that one up.
Yeah, I needed that.
Yeah, you need to clean that one up. This one comes from the 479. A glob of peanut butter from B in Salesville? And your chili?
In the chili?
I've never heard of that.
I'm willing to try it.
Well, he says while it's simmering, you put a glob of peanut butter.
I don't see how that would make it. Not any better, you know.
Yeah, it's hard to find any reason how it wouldn't be as good.
Back to Paul's question on the beans. One thing I've done before where, like, you've been to, take your favorite barbecue restaurant, whether, you know, wherever it's at. If you've got leftover beans from there, or go buy that place and get a quart of beans or something and use some of their baked beans in your chili, you might be amazed how good it might turn out. I've got a barbecue place. So I'll go get some of their beans and use that, some of their baked beans, as one of my bean selections.
Yeah. I mean, it's...
That's another option.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with chili. No two pots ever come out the same.
Mm-hmm.
They're all a little bit different.
Yeah. Well, Stoner Nashville says sprinkle some brown sugar into it. I've heard that as well. I mean, you can do it in different ways, too. So
Stan says he's taking notes. Stan, you don't need notes. Mm-hmm. You wrote the book.
Yeah, and we have
that little blender trick I told you might be helpful.
Yeah, we have that guy, Kirby and Branson, who says, Morning Rush is beginning to sound like Ruskin and Zach. I tune in for sports, not chili recipes. Talk about garbage.
Where have you been for 2 hours and 45 minutes?
Yeah, I mean, we literally have talked sports the entire time.
Maybe
and if you missed any of that, you can tune into the Bud Light Seltzer podcast, which is available at hitthatline.com or ESPN. 99.5.com.
Yeah. If there's a segment you don't like, just skip to the next one. You know?
That's right.
And we do want to mention Bud Light Seltzer. We put it up against any seltzer.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's their, here's their new seltzer.
We've talked sports, LSU and Clemson last night, Arkansas basketball, Musselman for 245. We've had texts throughout the morning. Now we get about 50 texts. We talk chili, the machine's blowing up.
Mm-hmm.
So you tell me, you know, we're here for you. Y'all brought it up. Paul's the one that asked the question.
Blame Paul.
Paul wanted to know what kind of beans I put in my chili. I'm just here to serve you, the public.
Yeah, exactly right. Is chili year-round?
Not for me, but I don't have any problem with it year-round.
Mm-hmm. It's kind of like when we...
Definitely seasonal for me.
Yeah. It's kind of like when
it's
we...
It's cold weather.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what we talked about with turkey. You know, it's only Thanksgiving. It's like no one... You're not, you know, hanging out in May and saying, hey let's bake a turkey. A full turkey.
Where's that's the cranberry sauce?
Yeah, like nobody's doing that at all.
But so. I'm going to try to start that tradition.
What, to have turkey in
June? Yeah, you know, we have Christmas in July. You know, people always
Thanksgiving
have
Thanksgiving in June.
It's our Christmas in July sale. Come down this weekend. Save 70% off. Well, I'm going to have Thanksgiving in June.
Okay, so if you're going to do that in June, it's going to be on a Thursday, right?
I guess it should be.
Yeah.
You the need third Thursday in June. What is that?
18th.
Just in time for Father's Day. Perfect.
Yeah. All right. Well,
turkey is so
you're
going to
give everybody
man.
the 3 days off.
Do you like
though,
turkey
right?
chili?
Turkey chili?
Is that turkey chili chili?
It's not man's chili. You know, it's, I don't know.
It's the healthy version.
I know.
It's the diet Coke
I'm just saying,
chili.
turkey and dressing and all the fixings that they, it's the best food holiday. Why do we limit it to once a year? Now, overexposure will do too much, but you know, twice a year for Thanksgiving meal would not be too much for me.
But then if you eat it more than at Thanksgiving, is it as special when Thanksgiving finally rolls around? Or it's like, this is just like another day.
I think twice a year would be the ideal number. Smoked turkey, dressing, cranberry sauce, mama's green bean casserole, the whole schmear.
I'd be okay with that. I'm not against it.
No, I mean, turkey's just too good to have once a year. I mean, not a turkey sandwich because you got the Oscar Mayer over here.
A real
turkey. A
carved turkey.
Carved
turkey, yeah. Because just like in the Christmas story, they say afterwards, that's one of the best parts. No more turkey sandwiches when the turkey gets ruined. Because turkey sandwiches are a big part of it.
Because it needs to be a little bit dried in the refrigerator.
A little bit. So
put extra mayonnaise on it, you know?
Yeah, make it good. Now, Sam tweets and he says he's been using beer in his chili. Using amber or red or even a Guinness Black, it adds great depth. Also, always beans and cheese.
Yeah. Plus, you can sit there and drink it, too, while you're making it.
You win twice, brother. Turkey Cajun boil instead of crawfish. You just use turkey. Comes from Kyle and Prescott.
All right.
That sounds pretty good since we're talking about LSU and Cajuns and all that stuff.
They do a shrimp boil in honor of LSU.
There you go. Yeah. I wouldn't be against it. Hacker and Harrison says, we treat Easter like Thanksgiving, almost the exact same feast. Easter's always been
Easter's
about...
Easter's ham.
Ham, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like Christmas has always been about ham. I think it's a Christian thing or something like that where you just have... I don't know.
Yeah, Easter's ham.
I don't know. My mom, she made a ham on Easter one time. I tell you, it was so good it raised the dead.
This comes from Kristen Van Buren. Says June is the run through and testing phase for the real Thanksgiving.
That's how
you could treat it. So, you know, get your recipes right for the big holidays that are actually coming up as well.
At least a turkey. I mean, turkey's just too good to do once a year.
Yeah, because I love it, man.
I do too, man.
Why
do we only do this once a year?
Yeah, I don't get it. Micah texts
in. That can't be real. Is he being silly?
Yeah, he says put dark chocolate in chili.
I've seen that. Yeah, he's not the first to suggest that.
Is there anything you can't put in chili?
No, chili's a good one, like, you know, when you need to clean the fridge out before everything goes bad.
Just put it all in the pot. Hey, I have yet to find a bowl of chili that I've not at least enjoyed somewhat. Now, there's been
Some
are better than others, but there's not been a single time where I've sat back and I said, oh, this pot of chili just is absolutely awful. Did I say Prescott wrong? It's Prescott, not Prescott. Sorry.
I don't know. What did you say?
I guess I said Prescott.
I think either one's acceptable. I don't know. Ask a Curly Wolf if you know him.
A what?
That's their mascot.
A Curly Wolf?
Yeah, the Curly Wolves.
Why not just wolves? Why do they have to be curly?
Because they're Curly Wolves.
But what makes them distinct?
I'm just telling you, that's their high school mascot.
Well, you didn't come up with that.
I'm not making this up, John.
Well, you're ref the games.
I'm just telling you, the Prescott Curly Wolves.
I just didn't know maybe in your
Whether it's Prescott or Prescott. I think probably Prescott. You just Prescott. Just say Prescott.
All right. I'll remember that because I get that wrong. I get saline.
You say El Dorado.
El Dorado.
No, that's wrong. It's El Dorado. Yeah.
Get that wrong. When I lived in Little Rock, I said Cantrell.
Yeah.
I said Cantrell. And I am terrible with pronunciations of the state of Arkansas. Finest landmarks and cities.
Or
pronunciations of everything. So Kyle and Prescott. Says curly is definition for mean wolves.
There you go.
I thought that was surly was something for being mean. So
the surly wolves just didn't roll off the tongue.
Yeah, I'm telling you. See, this is the great thing about this show is here in the final segment, we figure things out.
Yep.
We get the chili thing down pat. We get Thanksgiving in June down pat. Figure out what curly wolves are. I mean, if this isn't just the prime time for the Morning Rush in the final segment of the show, then I don't know what is. But you know, that's always the thing, Tommy. I think, what was it that you discussed that if you weren't in radio, you'd do something with food or you'd want to do like a food show?
Someone suggested I should have my own YouTube cooking channel.
Now, okay, so, but do you actually cook or do you just like smoke and grill? Like, it'd be
that
more of that.
Is cooking.
Well, I know, but when I think of a cooking show, I think of, you know, the Pioneer Woman, while her kids are out there playing in the yard.
Pioneer Woman, Pioneer Man, cooking together as fast as we can.
Yeah.
Pretty good on the fly.
You got your theme song already. Got your theme song. Well, see, that's the thing is that your wife could be, you know, the Pioneer Woman.
I don't know if she'd enjoy that. She might. I don't know.
She can make cakes with the best of them, Tommy.
She can do it.
As we all found
out.
She
can destroy him.
Yeah. She's five-star there. Yeah,
that could work out so.
Honey, you're five-star in every category.
Yeah, well, maybe when Tommy makes it to his second million, he'll finally be able to retire and do something he enjoys.
Second? That's all?
Yeah, second million. So don't want to get greedy, Tommy. Don't want to get greedy. Not in this economy, in these days at least. But appreciate everybody that's been listening in to the Morning Rush today for Tommy Kraft and Matty T. I am John Neighbors. Same sports show, same sports channel tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you then.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.